Hi, I'm Bunny Guinness, and this is my podcast, Bunny in the Garden, with someone special. Someone who is well known for something other than their green fingers, but who is also a mustard-keen gardener. I'll discover them through their garden, why, how, and when they garden, the best tips they've learnt, and their gardening style and approach. Today, I'm really pleased to be interviewing John Humphreys in his garden. John had a reputation as an outspoken and challenging interviewer on BBC Radio 4 Today programme, which many listeners admired. He would skillfully make sure politicians answered his questions rather than allow the interviewee to give the audience the party message. His nickname was the Rottweiler. But John is also passionate about the environment, farming, and making his own compost. So, John, you were a BBC foreign correspondent for years in South Africa, America during Watergate.
You name it.
For 6 years, you were presenter of the 9 o'clock news on television.
Most boring period of my life, yeah.
But for most notably, for 33 years, you were presented the BBC Radio 4 flagship programme Today.
And well, it used to be a flagship when I was there, yes. It's obviously.
Absolutely. But you're also passionate about the environment, you're passionate about farming, and you have a garden.
I do.
And you
do.
Like composting. A very good composter.
Oh, can I show it to you afterwards?
You can show me your compost any
day. Peter Seger thinks it's the finest garden compost he's ever seen.
How
and
much did
Peter
you pay him to
is
say that?
The master, but we'll talk about it. Anyway.
But I first met you when you chaired a Gardener's Question Time programme in the House of Lords.
God, I do remember that.
But that's what made me think that you were quite a good gardener and interested in the environment. And obviously the things that you say
well,
on today.
How have you succeeded the way you have with judgment like that? Me a good gardener.
No, but you're passionate about
I'm keen
trees
on it.
And
I like trees
and compost.
And,
and when you say good gardener, to me it doesn't necessarily mean that you've got acres of parterres, manicured to within
a parterre
an
is.
Inch of their life. But it just means you care about where you live, the
I
environment.
Do. I do.
Yeah. So I heard the story about your leaving party, which also indicated me that Sarah Sands, your then editor at Today, knew about your passion, obviously. And apparently in the party,
yes,
they showed a film of a place near you where you have a place in Wales, which is where? Is it near?
It's in Ceredigion. Right. It's on the coast near Aberaeron. People might know Aberaeron, and it's sort of a couple of miles from Aberaeron.
And they showed you this video, and you sort of recognised the place, and then they homed in closer, and apparently Tony Kirkham came into view.
Yes.
And then you recognised your house as they came in closer, and she had presented you with some trees, which Tony Kirkham planted for you on your place in Wales. And I just thought, what a fantastic present, and how much does that show he loves trees?
I was terrified. I thought, you know, they'd give me a clock or something like that, which you'd never ever look at, would you? And you'd stuff in a drawer or something and forget about it. And it was the best work present. And as you say, I've done a lot of jobs in my many, many years. Massively the best ever I have had. They not only did that, Sarah, my then editor, as you say, got in touch with Tony Kirkham, said, you know, this is where he lives. I'd like to give him some tree. Would you recommend something? And he said, oh yeah, I know, because I can do this, that and the other. She, with one of the producers, drove the 200 odd miles down to Wales, to my place. I didn't know anything about this, of course. And it was she who planted them, with a little help, I suspect, from Tony. But nonetheless, she actually put her welly boots on and planted it. Was and there they are to this day, the three trees. And it was wonderful, absolutely wonderful.
So what was it that actually started your interest in gardening? I mean, in your lovely book you mention about your backyard in Cardiff and your father growing amazing runner beans and
in
you
the
growing
ashes
mint
from the fire.
Lots of potash, potash. Or was it a coal fire, presumably?
Oh, of course.
Of course, absolutely. Yes.
We had a
so they're not
coal
so
fire.
Good. Yeah, that they're not so good on the fire, on the plants, are they?
Really?
The coal.
I don't know.
Because coal has other byproducts in it, which you don't particularly want.
I mean,
wood
coal
ashes.
Itself is very bad, of course, absolutely.
Yeah.
Nowadays, I mean, heaven's sake. But it was the only heat we had.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, a coal fire in the kitchen, which was where we lived, and where my mum did her hairdressing, got the neighbours in for a bit of extra cash. She was a hairdresser.
Father, I didn't know that.
God. Mine was a childhood of smells, because my mum did the neighbour's hair and perms.
Oh, like, yes.
You're not old enough to remember, but
the
stink of the stuff they used to make their... Oh, it was horrible, a disgusting smell. So she did that. My father was a French polisher, and he did a lot of his work, you know, neighbours' chairs or tables or pianos or whatever. He used to take them apart and polish them in the kitchen as well. He didn't have a garage or anything like that, obviously. Mm. We were very poor. And he had to use all sorts of horrible chemicals to strip the paint or whatever. My childhood was a childhood of awful smells, yes.
But I also, in your book, you mentioned mint. You sort of picked bunches of mint and sold small and
large. That was my first job.
Oh, really?
Yes,
selling mint?
Selling mint. Mm. I picked the mint, which grew massively. Oh, mind you, it's a weed, isn't it? So, I mean, it does grow.
In Wales, when it's nice and moist, yes. Yeah, not such a weed with me, sadly.
We had runner beans and we had mint. That was it. And in the little strip of at the back of the house. And and I used to bundle it up into little bundles and slightly bigger bundles, and I'd knock on the doors of all the neighbours' houses and say, you want to buy some mint on a Saturday morning? Mm. And and I always sold it all. Yeah, you have 2 pence for a tuppence, 2 old pence, obviously, for the smaller standard, and 3 pence. Yeah.
And you did like gardening. You helped your dad in the garden with the runner beans and things.
Well, there wasn't much to do, in all honesty. I mean, he dug a trench and chucked everything in it, you know.
Potato peelings.
Precisely, yeah. I was about to say. Potato peeling. Anything at all. He just chucked it in the trench, the whole lot. Mm. And then, the beans. Didn't cost anything. You use this year's beans for next year and all that sort of thing.
Yeah. Seeds, why? Do you mean you saved your own seeds?
Saved our own seeds.
Yeah.
And that was it. So we had beans and we had mint. I don't know why I got I became hugely enthused about it, so much so, and it was partly because of the financial bit, because, money was short at times, very short. And I had an allotment, my own allotment, from the age of 13.
Really?
Yeah, which I used to go to and grow all sorts of stuff. So, from quite an early age, I was we were more or less self-sufficient. Self-sufficient, that's not true, but we grew a lot of our own stuff, one way and the other.
And did your parents encourage this? Did they come down with you, or was it just you would just pop
sake.
Off?
Life wasn't like that in poor households. No, they were busy doing.
They're just glad you're out of the way or occupied safely.
I have no idea. I simply don't have any idea. No, I mean, there were 5 of us. Well, my little sister died, but they were just busy doing their own things.
So then you got into grammar school, which was quite something.
I did. The one thing my mother did, I mean, we didn't do stuff as a family, we didn't have holidays, things like that, but she made us do homework. Mm. Every single night, and we did. And yes, I got into what was allegedly the best grammar school in Cardiff, in Wales, some said. Hated it, absolutely hated it, full of snobs. Well, anybody had any money was a snob in my book. That's the way it was. And I really disliked it. I think I was the only poor kid in the class in my year. And it was, you had to wear uniforms and things like that. And all of that was a bit of a problem, but I got into grammar school,
But you obviously...
Left at 15, as soon as I could.
You obviously sort of kick against authority, don't you?
Yes,
you
I
don't like
authority.
People telling you what to do.
I don't like authority.
No.
Which is silly, we've got to have it, I know that.
And so was that what that held you back from going on in the grammar school? Because looking back on it, well, actually probably not, because you think the best training, is this right, for a journalist is just learning your way up.
I think it's the only way.
Only way. So if you had got to Oxford from grammar school and got this and gone into the BBC like that, you think you would have been much better the way you did it?
Well, that was inconceivable. I did not know anybody who had been to university or was at university. I mean, that's we lived in a slum, and, kids from slums in those days did not go to university.
Even from the grammar school, they didn't even get a couple into university.
No. Well, as I say, I was the only really poor one, I think, in my year in that particular school.
Yeah.
But no, I mean, I, no. The only contact with people who did go to university with people like us. I'm sorry if I make this sound, you know, although poor me.
I
did all right out of it in the end. But it was on Rag Day when in Cardiff, when the university would have the rag day, and students would be there with their scarves, which I wanted to use to strangle them with, I seem to remember. And I don't know why, I just found the whole thing utterly preposterous. So it didn't even occur to me that I should go, but I wouldn't have done. I mean, we just didn't. Mm. But, I have no doubt, I've got various so-called honorary degrees and stuff like that when I started going on telly, because universities are so pathetic that if you've been on telly, they give you an honorary degree. I mean, it's just so silly, isn't it? But there you go. I would shut down about two-thirds. I mean, so I'm being serious for a moment. I would close two-thirds of the universities in this country and spend the money that is saved on that on good technical colleges of one sort or another. Further education by all means, but not. We need another generation of people who can distinguish between Shakespeare and A.A. Milne or something. We don't need that. But we do need decent technical colleges. Anyway, I am drifting away. But I was offered by Warwick University. They gave me one of their doctorate of laws or whatever nonsense it was. And then, subsequently, they offered me a job. They said, we would like you to become a professor. And I said, oh, what am I going to do? We're setting up a new department, a media studies department, and we would like you to run the department, to be head of the department and be the president. And I said, yeah, okay. And they said, oh, gosh, right, really? I said, one condition. Yes. In my first week in the job, I will close the department down.
Oh, that went down a storm.
That went down well. Well, no. Perhaps you're not the right man for us, are you? I said, no, I don't think I am. No, I would close down all media studies. What a load of media studies, good heavens alive. No, you have to learn on the job, I think.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I do definitely agree. Yeah. I remember when I worked with ITV, you know, they said similar thing. They had all these people with degrees applying for jobs, degrees with media studies, and they would go straight in the bin. They wanted people who had learned on the job at that time. But no, and also, I'm just interested in why you were such so anti-authority. My dad was exactly the same. But it's interesting. But the story that you tell in your book of your father going to lunch with his aunt on Sunday and the vicar bursting in the door without a knock and saying,
why weren't you in church this morning?
Yes. And she was really humble about it and said, I'll come to Evensong and all that. But why do they have the
right? Well, her excuse was that
nephew was there.
Much-loved nephew had come all the way from Cardiff, which was a long journey in those days, with his lovely young fiancé, and to see her.
Yeah. But also the story of when you were doing your newspaper round at school before you went to school. Got up early.
Gosh, you did read the book, didn't you?
Absolutely. Got up very early. And then obviously the papers hadn't arrived because the roads are covered in snow. And so you thought, do I wait for the papers to come and then deliver them and then I'll be late?
Oh, no, I didn't even consider.
You knew you wanted to do your job.
Oh, you had to. It was the job. It was my job.
Deliver
the stuff. And it was paying me 15 shillings a week.
Yeah.
Which was,
So you arrived at school. Try to explain to your headmaster why you were late.
Not all that late, but
a bit late. And he gave you a thrashing.
Oh, yeah, that's the way it was.
And then I liked the story when later on they said, will you come and give the speech at whatever?
That's true.
And you said you sent them a copy in advance of what you would say.
And they withdrew the invitation. Yes. That was because I was on telly and I'd succeeded.
Yes. Oh, you're a celebrity. We want you, John. You're lovely.
Pathetic.
Yes, absolutely. But anyway, so do you think whatever, I think some people, wherever they're born, they just have this natural, they're born with a natural thing against not liking being told what to do.
That.
Or is it because of your father? You don't know.
I genuinely don't know. One of my closest friends, actually, this is quite interesting. And the chances against this happening are a jillion, zillion, trillion, billion to one, was Chuckle Norman Rees, whose name you might, it'll ring a bell with you if you think about it when I tell you this little story. He was one of my mates when I was a kid. He was a little bit older than me, but exactly the same. He poor, even poorer than me, because he didn't even have a father. His father had run off with just his mother, and they were dirt poor. And of course, he left school as well as me at the age of 15. And some years later, he, Norman, and I were standing in the Oval Office of the White House with the President of the United States sitting opposite us. And Norman looked at me, and I looked at Norman, and Norman whispered, "Not bad for two kids from Splot, is it?" And Splot was where we'd lived, and it was a slum. And neither Norman nor I obviously had had any education beyond the age of 15. And there we were. I was the most senior foreign correspondent in the most respected news organization in the world at the age of 26, 27, whatever it was. Norman was the same for ITN. And two kids from a slum who'd had no further education of any sort end up doing the two biggest, in those days, the two biggest journalistic... I mean, what are the odds against that? Not just two kids from a slum, but the same slum. It's extraordinary, isn't it?
It is. But you're obviously driven, aren't you? Obviously, right, and you wanted to get on. Obsessive, which is amazing, really, obviously, that you've done that.
Oh, I've also, it's very, very important to make this point. I have also had huge luck. Right place. It is true. Right place at the right time. You can't engineer that. I arrived in the United States for the first time in my life, expecting the BBC had asked me to go over there to set up. We didn't have a television news bureau in New York, or in the States for that matter, and they asked me to go over and set it up. The idea was I would stay for 3 months, set up the bureau, stay for 3 months, and then go back to London. And within a week of my arriving there, a couple of blokes decided to break into the offices of the Democratic Party in Watergate. And not long, so I didn't stay for a few weeks or a few months. I stayed for several years, and I was there in the White House on the morning that Richard Nixon became the first president in the history of the United States to resign. And now that you can't, that's luck. I went to South Africa. Much the same happened there. My very first foreign story was in what we now call Bangladesh. It was East Pakistan in those days. I was asleep. The first night we were there, literally the first night, I'd never been anywhere like East Pakistan in my life before, and I was asleep top floor of the Holiday Inn Hotel or whatever the hotel was, and there was some sort of rumbling sound. I felt, oh God, must be an earthquake or something. Anyway, I went outside, and it was the Indian Air Force bombing the airport. It was the beginning of the war. Now, and so I got wonderful coverage, and it made my name. That's luck. You can't engineer that.
What I find fascinating is when you said you were doing the 9 o'clock news, and that was, as you said, the most boring job
deeply
ever.
Boring.
Because you just read from a...
No. I wrote my own stuff.
Oh, you wrote your own
stuff?
Oh,
yeah. Oh, no, okay. I have never done any job in my whole life where I've let somebody else write what I'm going to say.
Oh, right.
Ever.
Yes.
Ever. And I shouldn't... Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Mm.
You then seize the opportunity when you're offered the Today programme without really, you say, thinking about what it entails. But having, the car would come at 3:45 and you'd get there, you'd read the papers in the car, go on in.
If there are any rules about doing interviews with politicians, particularly, obviously, because they're the most difficult for all the obvious reasons, you need to be well informed.
Yes.
You need to be on top of the subject. You need to know, obviously, you're not going to know as much about the economy as the Chancellor of the Exchequer, but you have to make a pretty bloody good fist of it, and people have to think, he knows what he's talking about. I would want to be briefed, absolutely. Mm. What I would not let anybody do is write my questions for me. By all means, suggest topics or suggest whatever, of course, that sort of briefing. Absolutely valuable, and there were some very, very good producers on the programme, and I absolutely, I listened to them carefully. They were hugely important. You had to be disciplined. I would not sit in that chair at 6 o'clock in the morning and wing the programme.
So then the mastermind bit surprised me, because I would have thought...
Surprised
me
too.
a thinking guy like you, would you really want to sit there and ask the questions? It's a fantastic programme. I'm not decrying it in any way, but I'm just surprised that you did that.
Well, I was too. And when they said it, I think I said, you've got to be kidding. But I'm not sure that I did. I think I probably said how much. And the answer was quite a lot.
Yes.
Not that I needed one, but anyway. Yeah, it was just fun.
Mm.
And it was different. It was and it was a serious programme.
Yes.
When all said and done. Yeah. And it was actually interesting to see how people responded. Intelligent people sometimes, not always, obviously, some of them think it's too short planks, but they had the sort of memory that, you know. Not all of them. Some of them were in fact there is a certain gentleman whose name, all right, I'll tell you who it was, who he's about to become, because we're going to have a Labour government, aren't we? And he's about to become Foreign Secretary in the Labour government, second or third most important man in the land. And he was a guest for one of the celebrity, you know, one of those, yeah, the celebrity, whatever they call themselves. And his mastery of the facts was a sort of, for instance, I mean, if I were to ask you who succeeded Henry VIII, you might not know it was Henry. Actually, I won't tell you. You might go on. Do you know? Probably don't. It was Edward VI.
Edward, yes. Yeah,
exactly.
Yes.
But Henry VII? I don't think so.
No.
No.
Oh my gosh,
no.
That's,
I know, and there were lots of similar.
But would it
examples.
Be? I'm just
anyway,
playing devil's advocate. Was it because you're
course.
So nerves?
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah,
so I could say something thoroughly stupid in those situations.
And nothing would get me in that seat. No, no.
Oh, I was going to ask you that.
No,
so
no,
you've
no.
never done it.
Oh,
no.
God forbid. Oh, I would guess 0, 0, 0. Oh, my memory is such that it would say to me, ha, you're not going to remember this, are you? You know, that little bit in the brain that does that. Like, I can't remember people's names and things like that. No, I have a dreadful memory.
Well, back to gardening, a more leisurely topic. So this is your garden that you have been in for about 25 years?
Well, my son was 23, so it'll be 24 years, yeah.
24 years. Yeah, it's a lovely bosky garden.
Oh, I like that word, bosky.
Isn't it? And it's got lots of big evergreens for your blackbirds to shelter in, no doubt. So,
which I worship.
What are your favourite things about this garden?
Do you know what? That question, which is a perfectly good question, obviously, but it requires me to name plants.
No.
Because I struggle a bit there. This, for instance, we're standing underneath it, and it's, what is it, about 20 feet tall, would you say?
I would say it's about 5 metres. 5 metres.
Yeah,
15
yeah, yeah.
foot, yes.
Anyway, it's taller, I'm just looking at that. It's taller than the house, or about the sun. Whatever. And it started life in my last house. We didn't have a garden. It was, you know, we had a flat roof in a pot, a little tiny pot. And it's a bay tree, isn't it?
It is.
It is.
Laurus nobilis, if you want to be the Latin. Yes.
And there's also one there, isn't there? Look, which
yes.
is doing the same
yeah.
thing.
Yeah.
So I like that just because it came with me. It was nobbit a lad when I moved here, and I brought it with me. And it's done awfully well, hasn't it? So I like that.
And you use it. Do you put it in your soups, your famous homemade soups?
No.
You don't?
I don't
it's
know
lovely.
How to. What should I do? Tell me.
You just...
What should I
just
pull off?
If you're making stock or anything like
I've
that...
I've never made stock in my life.
Even when you're wonderful homemade soups? I'm disappointed.
Well, you won't be when you try it.
Okay.
Well, it's going to be a test.
You pull off the leaves and put them in, and it
literally just that.
Yeah, just that. And you can put it in.
And
rice
it doesn't
pudding.
Matter whether they're as green as these
no,
are.
No, no. I mean, I wouldn't probably choose that one that's been eaten
no,
by someone. But it's a remarkably healthy bay tree. It's got no sooty mold, which they often get because they get
no what?
Sooty mold. They often get a little bit black. Spotties on their leaves because right. they have suckers that suck out the little insects, suck it out and excrete the stuff on the leaf, and then a black sooty mold goes on it. But yours is looking perfect.
And
healthy.
Should I just leave it alone?
Or? You can do what you like with bays. If you were more topiary minded, you could make a spiral topiary thing. But I can't believe
I don't
you
want
would want
that.
Anything like that,
no,
John.
I don't think so. Because there's another. This one behind me. See, this was here when I moved in. And that's, I didn't plant that. It's one of the, I think there were four or five plants in the garden when I moved in, and that was one of them.
Oh, right. And then you've got the catalpa.
And the catalpa,
the huge
catalpa
tree,
which
is in the back left-hand corner. And it's a multi-stem.
Well, I think
it's two stems.
Apparently lightning happened or something. I don't know. Of course, I don't know. And neighbours who do know a bit about it think that I don't know. Anyway, it's two stems, yeah.
Yeah.
But not doing well. I do remember the first year I was here. It was sort of Septemberish or something. And I was working in my office, which is, I'm pointing to the house behind, which looks, the back of the house that looks out onto the garden. Mm. And I looked out and I saw that the lawn was white. Oh my God, it's snowing! September! That's bloody early for the snow, isn't it? Anyway, so I ran, and of course what it was the flowers were all dropping down, but in massive numbers. And and the whole, I mean, this is how healthy the tree was, I suppose it tells you that, doesn't it? The whole lawn was you know, massive flowers.
Mm.
And but not any longer, I'm afraid. And the only, yeah, it also attracts those ghastly birds that...
Parakeets.
Yeah. Because they love the sea pods, but not many sea pods this year either.
I see some there. But you see, often when you see a tree and it's having a problem, it will flower and fruit massively because it wants to reproduce.
But this one hasn't,
which makes me think you might be okay for a bit.
I mean, really?
I can see quite a bit of deadwood. But what would worry me most, really, just to be on the...
Is it falling on the bloody house?
Well, is that wall. It's right by, you've got two forks, and one of them is slightly pushing the wall over. I don't know who owns your wall.
Yes, but it's
due to your tree. So, and it's just, if someone should be the other side of that wall when it came down,
Yeah, I should worry about it, shouldn't I? You're right.
I would probably get a friendly tree surgeon.
I've had a tree surgeon do stuff to it over the years.
Yeah.
But I think I need to get him back. Would you actually take that whole...
I would have a better look at the wall and see how much is pushing the wall over, because that would be my prime concern.
Good advice.
Because I don't think it would fall on the house. I think it's too short, isn't it?
Yeah, too short.
Way too short. I love the way you've got your shed, which looks pretty stuffed and not particularly tidy.
Yes,
but I can't judge on these matters because I'm awful.
Well,
but
it's
lovely
to be an
tucked
office.
Behind the... Was it tucked behind the laurel here?
Ah, now this is a laurel, isn't it?
That's a laurel, yeah.
Now, tell me, it started again, little thing, and my then partner ordered me to chop it back because I don't think she liked it very much. And anyway, I didn't, and now it's massively big, isn't it?
It is, but your whole garden's like that, isn't
it?
It's buxom shrubs everywhere. If you don't mind it and you're not going to be sunbathing or using it for something else, this bit of lawn, I think it hides the shed very nicely.
Well, it does, doesn't it?
So
I did want to cut it back, how much could I do that without
you
harming
could go
it?
Right down to the ground.
No.
You could,
and
I've
it would
cut
just
those
grow again.
And they will go back, and in a 2 years, so now let's say the shrub is 2 metres high by 3 metres wide, and if you cut it down to the ground...
Well, certainly wouldn't do that.
You could do, and it would spring back. So you can do what you want.
And if I'm now holding...
Well, what would your aim be? Before
I wanted to get no bigger, because there's another one over here, as you know.
Yes.
And I don't want the garden to be totally
covered with laurels.
Out.
Yeah.
So I think I'd like to take about a third of it off.
The height and the size.
Not so bothered about the height, but the sides. Would that be
feasible? You could do that. So I would just go in and you'd cut them back. It's almost what you call plunge pruning.
Plunge pruning, yeah.
Well, you can do that. You could go in and cut all those back to that.
Ah, right. And that's a good idea, isn't it? Rather than sort of do what I've done and with sort of trim that, you know.
No, you need to go further. If you want to reduce it by what you say.
That's...
And I would, I mean, it will look, I would probably do it in March, April.
Right. Ah, and that's the other thing I need to know.
Because when you do this, it's going to then push forward into growth. Because it's going to look pretty sick. It's just going to look bald, isn't it? It's not going to look sick.
No, that's true. So March,
April.
So
then you will have the minimum time of looking at it, not looking
because
nice.
Because it'll start sprouting again
and hide it. And probably in 2 years' time, you won't know you've done anything.
What about this thing here that is obviously planted by a bird? What is it, for a start?
It looks like is it a horse chestnut with
this
sticky buds?
Not a clue.
But they're quite small, sticky buds. And it is not... I mean, you... you don't particularly want it. It's a foot from the shed, 300 mil. So it's too big to move it, I would say.
So
now.
Chop it down.
I would just chop it down and kill it. I have got one of those wonderful little pruning saws that they're like a mini chainsaw and they have a battery that you push in.
I should get one of those.
Yeah, if I was cutting that shrub down, I'm not saying you do, but that shrub's got 75 millimeter diameter trunk. And with my little mini hand saw, it's not really a chainsaw, it's not as beefy as a chainsaw, but it would get through that in like 5 seconds.
Well, I had a chainsaw, obviously, on the farm. I cut down a lot of sycamore trees with chainsaws over the time, mature ones. Nearly chopped my foot off once.
Oh, really?
But I was I'm used to using proper big
kits.
Chainsaws. Yeah. Well, because of the farm.
All
this on, there's obviously loads of
foliage.
Stuff.
You've got a lovely Clematis armandii there, evergreen Clematis. Which
and
is
I can just hack that back as much as I want.
You can cut them down to the ground if you want to.
Right.
And it will, it's renovation
and it'll just
pruning.
Come back.
But it's nice like that. Why, to be honest, John, why would you want to cut that Clematis?
Because it's dragging the fence down as well.
You might find it's holding it up, you know.
That's true. Actually, do you know what?
That, I love the look of that. It's dissolved your fence and you hardly notice it's there.
You're a gardener after my own heart. This used to be all the big, nice, whatever it is.
Hebes in the shade, Rachiensis. And it's got too much shade now, hasn't it? From
I suppose. Is that
it?
I don't
know. Everything.
Is that why it's all...
It's an evergreen Hebe, Rachiensis. They are fast-growing, short-lived. You know, they will... Unless you cut them back regularly, every spring...
I never cut anything back, ever.
No.
Never
well,
do anything.
Then they go all baldy at the bottom, and you get this baldy twigs and the bit on the end.
That's it.
So they're... I mean, they're better than nothing, but and you've got...
But they're not going to come back again, are they?
No, they're going to look miserable for the rest of their lives.
Right, that's good
so
advice.
So I wouldn't
Excellent.
Worry. I think your whole philosophy in this garden, tell me if I'm wrong, is it looks after itself pretty much.
You've got
you
it.
Say.
Well, it looks after itself.
But it does look to me like a great habitat for all sorts of birds and little mice.
A big
and
factor, and bees.
The odd, and bees. So, you know, I wouldn't go chopping madly if I were you, to be honest. And you've got this wonderful... Is it a hawthorn?
Yeah.
Multi-stem hawthorn. You've got lovely big ivy. Now, you probably hate ivy. From
no,
what you said
I love it. But if you come a month ago, you wouldn't have seen anything. I chopped a huge amount down.
Oh, right.
And I mulch it all. That's good, isn't it?
Oh, that's wonderful.
But now, here is your starter for 10.
Yes.
Tell me what to do about it. Because what we are... Well,
camellia.
What we are looking at, Peter Hobday, who was another Today programme presenter, and I used to argue about camellias. He insisted it's camellia, and I insisted it was camellia, so I'm glad you say camellia. Anyway, if you remember me chairing Gardener's Question Time, after the show, I asked all of you experts what to do about my camellia. Doesn't it look healthy?
It looks very healthy.
And do you know what
very
will happen?
Leaves. The buds are going to drop.
They will all go brown before, they'll start in, what month are we in now? January. In another matter of, not very long anyway, soon they will start to flower and you'll think, oh gosh, isn't this going to be lovely? And then they will just all go brown and drop.
So they don't even open?
No.
So I think it's got bud blight, which is a fungal thing. You see,
this ever since I've been here.
Yeah, because it could have got in there. You didn't plant it. It was here when you came.
No,
you said, yeah. There is a reason that they don't open well, and that's because they're dry in the September before. But I don't think it's the case here because it's done it every year.
Every
for you.
Year.
And so
I tried watering because one of your colleagues on Gardener's
Crescent said water in September.
Which I did.
But
it
made
no
difference.
So
I think it's a fungal thing that's attacking the buds. And I think the only way you would do it, which I'm sure you won't do, is you would clear up all the infected buds, take them away so there's no reinfection, cover the ground with a thick mulch to stop any spores getting up and reinfecting. So you could do that. I mean, a simpler way to do it is camellias do actually respond quite well to heavy pruning. So if you wanted, I love the shape of it.
Well,
that's
the
only
thing, isn't
it?
It's
So if you didn't want to go through all that faff, I would just live with it and just enjoy it for what it is, or you do what I say.
Yeah.
And mulch and compost are brilliant. Yeah, I wouldn't have thought you would have liked that, John. I would have thought you...
Well, oh, no mulch. I'm going to ask you what I must do with all my mulch. Now, this is...
Choisir.
Oh.
What were you going to say?
I've forgotten.
Choisir, choisir, tenata.
I would have said choisir.
Sunburst.
Anyway,
golden
again, it was
form.
Tiny when I planted it,
yeah.
And it was green, and yeah. then it turned yellow. And people said to me, "Oh, it's going to be dying now because it's turning yellow." And it's been yellow, and it produces lovely flowers.
I love it. I think
it,
the new growth usually comes more yellow, doesn't it? If you look at it now,
yeah, that's
the new
true.
Growth is more yellow. You've probably got it when it was like that.
No,
little
I
bit
got
like
it when it was dark. Oh, no, yes, yeah.
Like
it
that.
Was like that.
And that's the older growth, which is green.
Right, okay.
You see, so that's what, all it is. So the golden stuff, it's meant to be. It's healthy, it's fine.
At some point, I'm going to have to... I don't want to cut it back much, but because I love it.
So why do you want to cut it back at all, then? I mean, you could if you want.
Going absolutely everywhere, I suppose.
I thought you were live and let it be sort of man.
Well, I have been, but this one, is, everybody says, oh, look at all... Anyway, all right, I'm going to
leave.
Well,
you can. A client of mine has a Choisir tenata hedge, not the yellow form, but a green hedge. And it is a very fast-growing evergreen hedge with these wonderful orange blossom-scented flowers.
Yeah.
So it's got a lot of plus points.
Right. This I can't remember, obviously. Oh, this. Yes, Peter Seger gave me this when it was tiny.
I'm just trying to think what it is. With no leaves, it's a wee bit difficult.
It is completely, quite. It's wonderful. The blossom, very, very pretty. And phenomenal for bees. The bees absolutely go bonkers about it.
Yes.
But I just leave it. I mean,
well, it's fine. You're happy with it, yeah. You see, with shrubs, John, all this compulsion to cut them back.
Well,
basically, in nature, no one would be pruned.
Well,
and so you do it just to serve your end.
Yes.
Really. So if you think, I mean, some things, daphnes, they say you should never prune. You know, there's lovely things, a beautiful spring scent. But even I do prune my daphnes when they get in the way. And they don't
kill
daphnes. You know, they've got lovely... No. The smell in sort of February, March is to die for.
Right.
It's really nice. And that's one of the ones you perhaps shouldn't prune, but I do and they don't die.
The name of this. So don't tell me. This. It's called a Robin Hood tree.
Oh, is it? It's Fritinia.
Yeah.
Fritinia, Fraserii,
I bought two of them, tiny little.
Yeah.
I planted about six plants. That was one of them. I always bought them in two.
I've not heard that name because of the red leaves. In the new growth.
Is that why? I don't know. Anyway, isn't it doing all right? I moved it.
Fine.
It was over there. But I shouldn't do anything with that, should I? I should
well,
just
you don't
it.
Need to.
No.
If
exactly.
you wanted to, you could... You know, you can make these, it's multi-stem. So we've got three or four stems coming up from this evergreen shrub, which is about 3 metres high. And it's a nice shape. But you could remove all the leaves from the lower half. So you see the branch form work. And then you have the thing. And then you create a more obvious multi-stem, which is quite nice. But you don't have to.
Okay,
but that's an option.
But that could be done.
Yeah.
And this... I know.
Viburnum.
Viburnum.
Dinus.
I knew that.
Yes.
And
yes.
Did you know? Of course, you know everything. But it.
No.
I was the great volcano earthquake in
Pompeii.
Pompeii. I saw some there, and my guide of Pompeii said the Romans were absolutely bonkers about
Viburnum dinus,
and planted them everywhere. And there's
really?
Loads of them in Pompeii. Because I said, I reckon. Anyway. But it's that started about that big as well. And it's lovely, isn't it? And
they flower now, yeah.
Yeah.
They flower for so many months.
Don't they?
Which is really nice. I saw some in Hestercombe, you know, is it the National Trust property, I think I'm right in saying. Lovely old garden. But they were much more natural looking with less glossy leaves. So there's obviously lots of different forms of viburnum.
That's natural looking, don't you think?
Well, it was more natural looking than that, I would say.
Really?
And less glossy.
Oh.
And you've got a lot of flower cover as well. Theirs didn't have so many flowers. So, yes, this is really nice.
These, by the way, I've got hundreds of trees just...
ash tree, got a little ash tree
that's
there.
An ash,
yeah, that's that big black buds coming up.
Right, what
so
do
whether
do
they've got,
out?
Well, I think that is in the wrong place.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, ash is obviously having a problem nowadays. Those look like sedums, so they have late
they're
summer
lovely,
flowering. Really
late
nice.
Summer.
Yeah.
This Q, the head.
Oh, you mean the guy who planted the trees? Tony.
Tony. He gave me that.
Did he tell you to stake it, John?
No, but it was so far. Why should I not? It doesn't need it.
It doesn't need it. Oh. I always think that they always say that stakes are really bad for trees. Generally, well done, because this tree is only 1.5 meters high at most. And what happens when
it's
you
lemon.
Stake?
No,
them?
Not lemon. I keep saying lemon.
Cherry.
Cherry.
Little
How
difference.
On earth could you tell that with no leaves, no blossom?
Because it's got the bark is very definitely striated.
Wow.
But with tree staking,
that's incredible.
If you can avoid staking them, it's better.
Really.
Because that will have started to develop a fatter trunk above the tie than below, which is the inverse. You want them to move in the wind, so the little roots will break and then reform, and they're very fast.
Will it have helped that I pulled it out now?
Oh, it's great! It's great. The sooner, the better. Just go and have a look at the front garden.
Oh yeah.
And then
I'm desperate to have a look at the front garden. I don't know what that is. I stuck it in there when it was tiny and it's just decided to do it.
It's nice,
isn't it? And it's lovely flowers. What's this?
That's Sarka Cocker. Now Sarka Cocker, you smell that. Can you smell that?
There is a smell.
It's a lovely smell. A Sarka Cocker is one of the best sort of winter flowering evergreen shrubs.
Whoa.
Very easy, isn't it? You can really smell it now.
Yeah. No, you told me it. I've never done anything to it, obviously I haven't. It's just it's
You don't
tiny.
Need to. You really don't need to. But we did have a question.
Smell it.
It's really strong. Really strong, isn't it?
With something like this, by the way, that's a weed, isn't it?
That's a dog rose that's seeded in. I would have thought you would have liked your dog rose.
Well, except that there's no roses
no,
on
no,
it.
No, no, no. Well,
it
will
get
a few. Yeah.
Oh, and while we're on the rose thing, because I do have a professional gardener, a friend of mine, gave me some, and I had to put them in.
Had to put them in. You sound like you're not a fan.
Roses, but there's three of them. But
do you know what they are?
No. I mean, they produce it because I've never pruned them or anything.
How long have they been in?
15 years.
Oh, my God, seriously?
There they are.
Yeah, I can see some dead hips, John.
but there's nothing I can do to bring them back to life now.
They are alive, but to be honest, they are not thriving. It might not be you, John. They might just be a very weak...
Well,
not
and I also let all this stuff. What is all this
this
stuff?
This is carex. It's a sedge that just seeds. It's a sedge, and
grass.
It seeds around in dampish soils.
And should I just...
I don't like it. I get rid of it, to be honest. Because, I mean, you might... If you don't care, it will just spread over. And obviously, it won't compete with laurel and things like that. But it is a ground cover. But it will spread into the lawn as well.
And this, which I do like, but...
With the blue flower, isn't it? Ceanothus. Yeah, but they, again, you see Ceanothus, they tend to get quite leggy like that, but they are one that if you do cut hard back, it will probably turn up its toes.
Oh, will it?
Yeah, Ceanothus is one that even I would very gingerly prune. But then they're coming towards the light. But I don't find that a big problem. I might just be tempted to plant a load of more interesting stuff underneath them.
I'm going to make a note of that.
And you might put something that doesn't mind shade, that's quite easy. You might put something like anemone. Some of those herbaceous anemones under there with late summer colour might be quite good.
Tell me what herbaceous means.
Herbaceous means it will grow up. Let me find a herbaceous. It will grow up when the weather gets warm, when the days are longer. It will flower, and then it will die down, and it will come up the next year. So it's a herbaceous perennial, so it comes up every
year. So herbaceous is an adjective for anything that's perennial.
That's right. But you see, you would have an annual, just going inside, smelling the lovely beetroot soup, and we'll go through to the front.
Oh, yes, you can smell it, can't you? Whether it's... burnt to the because I forgot about it. Oh well.
A bit of carbon is lovely. Make our hair curl.
Oh, you're a woman after my own heart. This is exactly my attitude.
your front garden I love because it's so it's sunny.
It's not a garden, it's a wilderness.
I love that though because it's got all these hidey holes behind it. So you could sit on the bench by your front door.
Well, that is
no
true.
No one could see you.
That is true.
And it's such a bosky square, isn't it, this London square. And you've got
your
an olive.
Your second time you've used the word
I'm
bosky.
I'm sorry, I must
no,
stop that.
I love the word.
Yeah, it's better than wow. I tend to use too many
it's,
wows.
It's a great word.
But the olive tree you've got nestling in a pot there, which
no.
seems to be doing okay.
It's doing okay, isn't it? But, well, you tell me. I mean, I should know because I've got lots of olive trees in Greece, of course.
You see, do you know what I do with my olive trees?
No.
So what I would do is I'd get my angle grinder, I'd turn the pot on its side, I would cut the bottom off the pot. A disc.
You cut the bottom off the...
And I would
oh,
put
I wouldn't know how to do that.
Well, I could do it for you if I'd bought my angle grinder.
Really?
And I would put it on a bit of soil, and then your olive tree would root through into the soil.
Well, that's what I'd love to happen.
And then you'd never have to water it, you'd never have to feed it, and it would look
I
much
never feed
healthier.
It.
Will you water it, though?
Yeah,
they do. They love poor soil. Olives survive on anything, don't they? And I would do that. You've got a rosemary in a pot. I would cut
I've
that.
I've got one there as well.
And I would just cut the bottoms off your pot and leave them in it.
I've never heard of that before.
I tell you, it's amazing. You should look at my YouTube video showing you how to do it. And I've got about 80 pots in my garden. And most of them have no bottoms. They have no attention.
Wow. Why would I simply not pull it out of the pot?
And put it in the ground. Because I think it looks better. If you imagine that olive in the ground and you imagine it stood
up. No, I'm not. I'm
yeah, no, I mean, but your idea, a lot of people ask this, but it shows it off. It's a specimen in a pot as opposed to just something in the ground.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, okay. But I'm cutting that, wow.
That is easy, to be honest. Well, mate, you'll get
Are you
your
serious
son
when you say you do it?
Well, if I had an angle grinder, I would do it, yeah. But if you...
I could hire an angle grinder, couldn't I? Do you think?
Yes.
These, by the way, Sarah gave me these. They were roses, and they do well in her garden and whatever, but I think I'm just going to chuck them out.
Well, I think to keep a rose in a pot like that is a hiding to nothing.
Ah.
A lot of roses don't like being in pots.
Wow.
And there are some that they're bred specially.
So what
but
would you do
I,
with
I
these?
Just think,
I've got two of them.
Well, I'd take them out. If you like the rose, I'll put it in the ground and it would look a load better. It will grow better. Because when you have any plant in a pot for any time, soil has got air and soil particles. And what happens is that the compost breaks down, so you get very little air pockets. So it becomes claggy. And over time, that compost and soil in it will just disintegrate and you get clagginess.
Wow.
And the lack of air to the root is death, basically. And it gets worse and worse and worse. And unless you're going to pull it out, pull off the soil around the edge, repot it with new compost, which is quite a job when they get bigger and bigger and bigger. And something like a rose, I mean, some things thrive in a pot. And if anything does, it's probably an olive, which lives in cracks in the soil, a rock. But roses really don't like
right,
it.
It's going.
So put it in the ground and put something nicer in the pot, having
well,
cut
I'll
the bottom
just,
off.
But there's no point in replanting it. There's two. I'll just chuck
It'll
them out.
It'll take you
here.
2 minutes, John, and
but,
it might look nice.
But where would I... Really? You would
well,
do
Well, I don't chuck anything out.
Ah.
So
even some. So where would you put these two? There's one there and one there. I take them out of the pot and then...
Well, if I like them, just bearing in mind, do you like the rose? Because if you don't
they
like
don't
the
last,
rose...
They only last a day each.
And do they go on and on and on to produce
really.
One a new day? And
you get a few.
Oh, give them to a friend that likes them then. Forget
well, I don't
it.
Know anybody. Now, all these are self-seeded. All these trees and things.
With those ash trees, I'm afraid it's like 2 meters.
That's ash, is it?
I think so, yeah. It's got the black buds. It's 2 or 3 meters from the house door. It's going to get too big.
Mm.
It's going to be a problem. And it will probably get
so the same.
But the yew tree, did you plant the little yew tree?
No, it's self-seeded.
That's lovely, you see. Now, I would,
really?
But you wouldn't like this.
Huh?
I would prune it into a big yew ball slowly, and I think it would look quite fun here. And it'd be quite nice to prune. It wouldn't be too onerous. You might need to give him a bit of room from him. But I'd prune it into a nice shape, but I can't believe you're a topiary man.
No, probably not.
Probably not. So ignore me and just enjoy it. And if it gets over the way, if it gets too big, just things off, you know, it can do anything to you.
And this I did like, but it had better days. It was lovely for years.
What is it, do we think? I'm not sure what it is. It's deciduous.
It produced a lot of flowers for...
What time of year?
Can't remember. No, it's quite late spring.
Quite late spring. Right, what colour?
Trick questions, all these. Don't know, can't remember.
But I don't know what it is, so I might be giving the wrong advice. But with a lot of deciduous shrubs, that's obviously been in probably 25 years.
Yeah, at least.
You can renovation prune them. So you could get your little saw, the little hand saw, I've got a lovely little still one, and you can cut them all back in spring to about 150 off the ground, and it's called renovation pruning.
Really?
And they will come back as a new shrub.
Really?
And I remember when we...
Honestly, that will come back
as a... I don't exactly know what that is, but most of them do, and I think that probably would. You could try it on one or two and just see. And then you know, you're not likely to kill it rather than going and doing the whole lot. So try on just one or two this year, and then next year do the whole shebang. Yeah.
But all of the... Because I've got others here that are trees that are, I'm told... I can't remember who told me, it was probably Sarah. Quite interesting. This, again, everything is self-seeded, obviously.
This is an evergreen oak, isn't it?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. Well, they do self-seed well, don't they?
Well, that one seems to...
I love evergreen oaks, but that will grow.
But again,
too
close to the house, isn't it?
You can make them into hedges, You don't want a hedge, but have evergreen oak hedges, so you can prune them ruthlessly, because it's nice bit of evergreen cover.
Well, that's sort of
and
what
it's got cyclamen there, John. You've got some cyclamen.
Is that what
cyclamen
is?
Yeah.
Oh, is that good?
Looks like a cyclamen.
It's not just
lovely.
A weed.
No. It's lovely. It will produce little flowers.
And what? What
and
about?
And this is a real choice, Jobby, isn't it?
Oh, do you know what? I don't know whether I should have done, but this year I started eating the strawberries.
Oh, yes, it's a strawberry tree.
But then I read
tree.
Somewhere that you should... It's a strawberry tree. But then I was told you shouldn't eat the strawberries because they'll kill
you. You can, but they're tasteless. They're quite edible.
No, they were not tasteless. The ones I had very, very... But great, you tell me they're edible, yeah.
They're definitely
and
edible.
I thought
it didn't
was
kill you, proof of the pudding.
I thought it was completely dead because it was... Well, you can see what happened. There's lots of them. And it seemed to just come back again. Look.
I wonder why.
If you'd been here a year ago, it really looked as if it was... I thought that was the end of it.
Well, this is an Arbutus unido, isn't it? A strawberry tree, which is about 4 metres high. It's a lovely specimen, single stem leaning in a nice, characterful way, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think it's fabulous. And it's against the white render of your house. I think it looks fabulous.
Good, so do I.
Yeah. I see you've got another evergreen oak seeding there. And those are geums, aren't they? They're weeds, but they're herbaceous perennial, the one that you grow in the garden. But this is the native form of a geum. It's a nice little ground cover. I mean, I wouldn't be too worried about it, really.
Most important bit of the garden for me, really, because of
compost.
Because of what Sega said.
You're showing off your compost.
I'm showing off my compost. Now, if you...
Look at those worms.
Oh, normally, if the temperature were 10 degrees, well, it'll be... You could barely lift it off because of all the worms. There'd be hundreds and thousands of worms.
So these are red brandling worms,
which are not composting worms. They're composting worms.
It's probably freezing today, or 1 degree.
So they're
sleepy. They've gone to bed.
But if you went a foot down in that, you would see the most... Beautiful
compost.
Friable,
yes.
Absolutely beautiful.
So it's a little... Your compost bins are these little sort of plastic Daleks, aren't they? And you don't turn them, you just bung it on.
If you look.
Oh, John, that is the stuff.
That
is really nice. That's lovely. That is really nice. And
you
take it out, you shovel it out and put it on your garden.
No, I never use it. There's about 20 years of compost in there.
John!
I know.
You disappoint me.
I know.
I thought you were the compost guru.
I am. I'm mad about
it.
I don't know what to do with it, because there's another one here, which is different, because that's all kitchen waste, right?
Yes.
In there. And this is all leaves. But look at it.
Oh, leaf mould. Lovely.
Leaf mould.
Lovely. And how long's that been in there?
15 years.
John. Now, you said you had a sick tree. Right, so what I would do...
I said I had a what tree?
A sick tree. You
a
said
fig
that,
tree?
A sick tree, the arbutus. So what I would do
Hang on, go back on that.
So I would dig out the compost from there, and I would put it around the base of the roots of these sick-looking arbutus.
Hang on, which is the arbutus?
This one here, the strawberry tree.
Oh!
Because if you don't pile it against the bark, but just put it on the root zone, and that will help bring more bacteria, more fungi into that zone, and it will help aerate it.
I need to know this.
And I would put that and all that, and I would put it about 2 inches deep.
Wow, a lot then. And how old, I mean, that, for instance, that's only been there for a few months or something. But how...
So we'd
I mean,
leave
obviously,
your
that's
leaf
been
pile
there
at.
For donkey's year. Well, yes. It's one of them. I've got several leaf piles around the place.
Right. So I love the story of you and your leaves. Have we mentioned that?
It's true.
When you were in the press, weren't you?
I was. I was pilloried.
Jeremy Vine rang you up.
Jeremy
because
Vine.
Because a neighbour snitched on you.
That's right. Somebody
and you were
snitched.
Caught stealing.
Because I was stealing. They bag up in the autumn. The council bags up all the leaves from all these trees around the house here and pile them up at the end there. And eventually they come and take them away and do whatever. And I figured that I could put them to good use.
So you nicked the bags.
I would steal them and I would
brought
them back. And I got done. So they rang Jeremy Vine and told him about it for some reason. And Jeremy rang me and said, "Do you want to come on the programme and talk about it?" I said, "I don't think I do, because it's just so pathetic." And he said, "Well, I tell you what, I'll get the chairman of the council on, or the chief exec of the council on, and see what he has to say about it." And I said, "Oh, right, well, he's going to have a go at me and take me to jail or something." "Well, that's all right, let's do that, a bit of a fun." Anyway, the chief executive came on and Jeremy said, "What about this Humphreys man stealing all your leaves?" And the chief said, "What a good citizen, because what's he doing with them?" And Jeremy, I'd already told Jeremy what I do with them. He said, "He's using them, isn't he? How wonderful. So we don't have to take them away and do stuff. He is." And anyway, I had made this point to Jeremy earlier, some of them came from my trees. So I said, "I am prepared to give back all those leaves that are not mine if somebody will come and separate them." Because you see, some of them will be the leaves. This is obviously we're in a garden square, sort of tennis courts in the middle of the square. So lots of the leaves will come, but lots of the leaves will come from my own trees. So I will very happily give back if somebody can separate them. You know, it might take them a few years to do, but you know. Anyway, it was agreed that I was a good citizen.
Oh, that is good news. John, you mentioned when you started the Today programme that you said to someone, What do I do? What are tips for doing the Today programme? Hmm. And they said, just be yourself. And you said, "Well, I don't know what I am." But now, obviously, 33 years on, you know exactly what you are and
no,
exactly why it worked and why you were so good.
No, I don't. That's not true. No, that's complete rubbish.
Really? You don't know who you are and why you were good at the job and what were your strengths? Because you like questions.
The trouble is when one addresses a question like that, there is no way of answering that doesn't sound either conceited or self-satisfied or pious or whatever. Because the fact is, I've no confidence in myself. I was born with an inferiority complex and will die with an inferiority complex.
And that's what makes you so ambitious, do you think? Is it partly
I've never been conscious of being ambitious. I mean, I know that I have been, it's obvious, isn't it? I have been very successful. That is an objective fact. But I've always felt, you know, I kind of look, when are they going to spot that, somebody a bit better than me out there, you know.
So that's probably whatever. What gives you the edge, because you're not a self-satisfied person.
I'm certainly
you
not
that. You are. That's probably what it is, do you think, that drives
honestly,
you?
Honestly, the
fact you're so inquisitive.
Oh, now look, somebody said to me the other day, well, I get asked often when I do things, what is the qualification you need to be a good journalist?
Yes.
And I said, there's only one. You know, he was expecting a lecturer. And I said, one word. Without this, you cannot be a journalist. You certainly should not be a journalist. And that single thing is curiosity.
Absolutely.
End of.
Wanting to know the answer, not taking what you're
why
giving.
Do things work the way they are? Why do politicians work the way? Why does the system work? Everything is down to curiosity. Yeah. You want to know why.
Yeah. And yeah, absolutely. Who is the most impressive person you've ever interviewed? Can you say that? Probably that's
well, it's probably got to be Nelson Mandela because he was Nelson Mandela. And, you know, of all the human beings that, you know, yeah, well.
Right, that's good.
So
that's good.
I suppose it not because he was impressive in the interview, obviously, but because of who he was. And I lived in South Africa during the apartheid years and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And Mandela was a giant amongst human beings and a great man in every sense. And
that's interesting.
It would probably have to be.
I'll do you one question now and then I'll give you another.
Yeah, go on.
So what's your question?
My question is, see this... If I just, you can see what it is. It's just bits of rubbish, I guess.
Sat there. Yes.
I mean, it'll just rot down, won't it? If you see what I mean.
Well, yeah. I mean, some people get shredders, don't they? And they shred it up.
No, I've got a mulcher. I've got one.
Oh, well,
I use it all the time.
Well, there.
I just can't be bothered.
You can't be bothered. So. In nature, it doesn't shred it up. But if you put it there, it will get like it comes out of the shredder, but it takes 3 or 4 years,
exactly.
Doesn't it?
Well, I'll wait 3 or 4 years.
And it is great, but what you don't want to do is put it on the roots too much. But because you can, but what you'll find...
That's sad. It's lovely.
What's that?
This thing. It went all the way up Richard's house and all the
rest. Oh, yes, that was the solanum.
It was beautiful.
I took a cutting from it, John.
No!
Two cuttings of yours
and
when I
was
here.
And it's beautiful.
And no, it survived. It rooted, two of them, but then they got killed in the winter. And I think that's what happened to his last year.
Right.
And it is a particularly nice solanum because it was the one, Jasminoides, with a white flower with a hint of blue, wasn't it?
Very, that's right.
It was absolutely stunning.
Yeah. Good God.
And the cold winter killed mine off, and I'm amazed that it killed yours off too, because you'll be way warmer than me, but it was really cold last year. So my next question for me, that's Viburnum tinus again, isn't it?
But
that's in a tree. That's up in, that has grown into a tree-like form there, and it's on your front garden against your railings. It's lovely there, isn't it? Really nice.
Yeah.
You know, with everything that's going on nowadays, with the global warming,
yes,
with
indeed.
The royal family upheavals.
Oh, I don't care about them.
Well,
I do care about them. I'd get rid of them tomorrow.
The wars, well, we won't talk about that now. With all the wars and things, and the way we're burning up the planet, do you think it's going to take some massive cataclysmic event to make us come to our senses and to stop this? It just seems to be getting madder and madder. Or it must concern you greatly. It
concerns me massively, because the next great cataclysmic event will make all the other cataclysmic events look like minor disturbances. Not that you obviously can't say that about some unimaginable horror like the Holocaust, of course, but if we don't get a grip on it one way or the other, by we I mean our political leaders, whoever they may be, wherever they may be, the next step, I mean, you can perfectly well plot the scenario in which Putin says, we're not getting what we want to get. We're not making the progress in colonizing Ukraine that we want to, you know, that we want to do. So let's try a tactical nuclear weapon. We've got loads of them. And it'll only be a tactical nuclear weapon. That's to say, it won't invite retaliation, will it? I mean, I'm not suggesting that Putin would have this rational conversation with himself or whatever, but the outcome of what is happening now, just take your grip. Forget about the Middle East for a moment, although you can't forget about the Middle East, but it is entirely feasible. You can construct a scenario in which Putin deploys a tactical nuclear weapon. And inevitably, I think inevitably, once that has happened, the barrier has been broken, breached, whatever the word is, and we will end up with nuclear warfare. And that's the end of what we now think of as humanity. And that is, I mean, you know no more than I do, no more than that. Well, I was going to say that snail crawling along the wall there does. We don't know whether that's going to happen, but I am not massively optimistic. If you look at what's happening in the Middle East alone, nobody knows what is going to happen. I mean, we sent troops into Iraq on a lie, on a totally spurious. I can remember I interviewed Tony Blair on it more than anybody else. I think I did many interviews with him, including his when he left office. He gave two interviews, both to me. One on domestic affairs, one on foreign affairs. We talked only about Iraq, pretty much. And I gave him a pretty tough ride, as you might expect. And when I got to the final point where, and I knew, because I had had a lunch with the director of MI6, it was a private lunch, of course, had to be, but then the confidentiality got broken, and so I can now talk about it, but I couldn't at the time. But I knew what he, the director of MI6, were telling Blair and all that. And in the end, I challenged him, and he looked at me, and I...
You challenged Blair?
Yeah, yeah, yes. Yeah. And I said the equivalent of, you must have known that there were no weapons of mass destruction. You must have known that. It is inconceivable that you did not know that. And he said to me, and his eyes looked, I mean, Blair was not very good in some respects at concealing his emotions, and I think he failed on that occasion. And he said, I only know what I believe. And that struck me then, strikes me still, as one of the most crass and dangerous things a politician can say, because the exact opposite is true. Mm. When you wield enormous power, you should believe only what you know, what can be proven. And in this case, he did not know that there were weapons of mass destruction, for the very good reason that there were not. So we invaded, and the result of that invasion was utterly catastrophic. Mm. God knows how many hundreds of thousands of people have died as a result of it, and the Middle East has and so on and so on. It's the same in Libya, the same wherever you want to look. Mm. We are making a colossal mess of it, and I am pessimistic.
Mm. So was that, saying in Weasley, was he lying, basically, in Weasley words, or did he really choose to believe what he thought?
Do you know, I am never going to be able to answer that question, and neither is anybody else except Blair himself, and even Blair himself. I believe when he sat with George Bush, and indeed prayed with him on their knees, although he has never confirmed that, but I believe that is what happened in Texas on that fateful meeting when he said, assured Bush that we would join in the invasion. I believe he thought it was the right thing to do. The trouble is that Blair is a believer. He is a Christian. He's converted to Catholicism, as you know. I'm not. So I am nervous about people wielding power who have very strong religious beliefs. We only have to look at history to see where that gets us, in my view.
Yes.
And was he deliberately lying? I honestly think I know him as well as most journalists. I knew him for a long time, well before he became Prime Minister, obviously, and interviewed him many, many times, more than anybody else, I think. And I don't know the answer to that question, and never will, I suspect.
Yeah. Dreadful. I always remember that fateful day. It just seemed so extraordinary. Extraordinary action. Anyway, on to lighter things. I bought you a little present.
Yes.
And for your garden.
Yes.
And because you told me you no longer fly.
Yes.
I didn't realise. Yeah. So this, obviously in Greece you will have hundreds of fig plants.
It's a fig plant.
It's a little fig plant.
It's a little fig
plant.
It's
called Little Miss Figgy, in that most fig plants, as you will know in Greece, grow to like 3-4 metres. This one will only grow to about 6 foot max.
Perfect.
So it's much smaller for your London garden.
So where do I put it?
So I will put it in the sunniest position you've got. You could put it against the south-facing wall if you've got a spare
one, but
you're a bit short of that,
as you know, that is basically that south,
yes.
Sort of.
Yeah.
But as you can see, once all these trees are in leaf and all, there's not much sun.
Yeah.
And anyway, I mean, what's
this? You could put it there. That is an ash seedling. So an ash seedling. So I would remove that.
I'd get rid of that.
And I would maybe pull your hebe in the pot further forward. And you could possibly
that? That's
put
a hebe,
it, that's a hebe.
It? My son gave me that, my youngest me that for my birthday. Yeah. Isn't it nice?
It's nice, yes. The colour at this time of year is really nice. It's got lovely purpley magenta
and
flowers.
Is there anything I can do with it to stop it dying?
Well, it's in a pot. You see, I don't know about your propensity to keep lots of things in pots like this.
I don't. It's simple laziness.
Oh, right. Well, so I would get out your spade and plant it somewhere, like there, and then put the fig in behind it. So I'd put that there.
But what about this? Because that is quite nice when it's in leaf.
That's a berberis, isn't it? I think it's a berberis.
It goes. It's sort of not as healthy as it used to be. It was absolutely glorious.
And it's quite old. Yeah.
And it's
so
quite old.
Well, I think you could probably fit if you had that there and that there. I think they would fight among each other.
And what if I cut you, got rid of all this stuff and whatever that is?
Yes,
there.
The hebe. So you've
got. Oh, that's a hebe.
That's
I thought you said this
hebe.
Was a hebe.
They are the same. Look at
the
flower.
No,
they're
Lord.
Different types.
That's
obviously
a bit bigger than that.
But they're different types.
What I love about this is the density of it.
That's because it's new and it's young and everything. Because they do get very open and leggy
but
if you don't prune them.
But if I dug a hole for that, cut all this stuff away.
Yes.
And I won't get rid of that because it's quite nice.
It's nice. Yeah, it's nice. You could sort of put it there, couldn't you? The fig could come up like that. Or you could
put
it.
The fig in there.
Yeah,
I see.
Yeah. You could actually. No, I think so. Put it in the ground, I think, is better.
So there?
Yeah,
I think so. Right.
Yeah, and I'll move him into here.
Good, that's
lovely.
A decision
No, that's
made.
Great. So.
That soup's going to be cold now.
Yes,
again.
Thank you very much, John. It's been lovely to talk
to
you.
Well, on the contrary, I could spend the rest of the week or month or year or whatever it is.
Do that over the beetroot
so
soup.
Much.
Shall we?
Do it over the beetroot soup.
Well, thanks a lot.
But no, thank you.
Pleasure.
Thank
you. Right.
So that, just. No, I'll do. Yeah, that'll go there.
Yes, I think so.